powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost. Here we go now.
You know, Bump, I was looking over a lot of Rams stats yesterday, and they don't look great, but I have a fair question for you. Am I and our Seahawks fans potentially overlooking the Rams? Are we looking past the Rams because we so badly want this team to buck a two-game losing streak that I am ignoring the very real possibility the Rams could make us pay?
I don't think you're ignoring the Rams. I think that you're looking at their offense that's depleted. Quarterback that's not going to play, two receivers that aren't going to play, who's going to be their running back, and you're saying, all right, they shouldn't be able to move the football against this defense, so the chances of the Seahawks getting it done are high. So no, I think you're weighing out the odds at this point. Now, we know better than to just say, oh, it's the Rams, they're depleted, we're good to go. The Rams always play good against the Hawks, but no, I don't think you're overlooking. I think you're looking at numbers and personnel.
Okay, can I tell you two different things I found? The first is just how bad the Rams have been doing relative to other Super Bowl winners. So if any of you guys thought, oh, well, I think, you know, maybe there are other Super Bowl winners. You always have that Super Bowl hangover. You have a Super Bowl hangover, but it is less common for Super Bowl winners. 45 out of 51 Super Bowl winners ended up going at least 500 the following season. Mm-hmm. The worst record right now is held by the 2003 Raiders, who had 4 wins, and the Rams currently sitting at 3. Now, they obviously have a chance to improve on that, where they aren't going to be the worst team after winning a Super Bowl, but right now they are. So if you want to talk about kind of being the outlier and being the odd one out, yeah, they are the worst post-Super Bowl team.
Dang.
I know. But there are some good things. So they are really, really good against the run. The run defense grade is 88.4 from Pro Football Focus, which is top in the league. They have the third fewest missed tackles. Now, they're going to be without Aaron Donald and A'shaun Robinson, so obviously that's going to be impacted. They don't draw a ton of flags. So, I mean, you're still dealing with a defense that has been pretty solid at times, and a special teams unit that's actually improved over last year. You just are facing a horrible offense. So how do I make sense of this? How do fans make sense of this? Help me.
How do you make sense of it?
Is it a trap? Is it a trap?
It's always a trap. Always assume that it's going to be a trap, especially when you're playing teams like this with an offense that's second to last in this league. They're second to last running the ball. They're 29th when it comes to putting up points. You got to look at the numbers and take that into account, but then you also have to factor in just the human factor of things, right? You still got Sean McVay over there. You still got Tutu Atwell, who maybe can do some things. Only has, what, 7 receptions on the year. Van Jefferson is healthy. Higbee is their number 2 receiver at tight end. He's still going to be there. So technically, there's still guys over there who can make some plays, right? I think where the Hawks have to take advantage is just – This defense is not very good. Now, it's unfortunate that Bobby Wags is over there.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to do him like that. But you just got to get after him.
All right, let's take a listen to some of what the head coach had to say. Pete Carroll talking about the Rams in general. Cut number one, how they're coached and what he sees schematically.
Schematically, since Sean went there, they've done so many good things. And that's what I'm talking about to the team today and introducing the team to them is how well-coached they are, how smart they are, and how they look the same as they always look. And, you know, they've adjusted some things as everybody does. But they do it well, and it's just, you know, when they're in those uniforms coming out of that locker room, those guys play good football.
All right. Now, they're not going to face Stafford. There's a couple different options. Pete Carroll, though, says, you know, just because they're not facing Stafford in cut number two doesn't mean they're not going to see some of the same ability.
They have some dynamics with the different guys that they have available, and we'll have to see who it is. We have to prepare for both of them. So, from John Wolford, you see the same offense, basically. And he takes off and runs a little bit, too, you know. But he's basically the same offense as we saw him earlier.
From the 509 on the Mac and Jack's text line, overlooking the Rams, just like everyone else overlooked the Raiders. I think the Raiders are a better team than the Rams.
I don't think we overlooked the Raiders. I think we both
People did.
Some people might have, but you and I sat here and gave the Raiders the respect that they deserve because of the weapons that they have. Now, and let's not forget, Wolford beat us, right?
He beat us last year. Yeah,
but they also had a whole bunch of pieces that were healthy that can help him. So Pete Carroll is a head coach. He's a responsible man. He's going to make sure that his team is ready to go and they are focused. And you praised the opponent. My coach, Tom Salter, back in high school says, look, you always praise the opponent. You never go out there and give them bulletin board material and convince yourself that all you have to do is show up. That's what Pete Carroll is doing. I whoever Pete Carroll's best friend is, I hope Pete Carroll hit him up and be like, man, we're about to smack these dudes, man. They ain't got
Call Stafford. Immediately after.
You know what I'm saying? Coop is Cooper Kupp is gone. We're about to smack these dudes.
Oh,
I hope that's his mentality. But he's, you know, he's doing what a head coach
gotta
do.
Gotta be respectful. What have you seen on tape when you've watched this team?
I've seen a team that is not explosive at all. Offensively, it looks elementary. They do some of the things that they did with Matthew Stafford, but when you have Bryce Perkins back there, a guy at the University of Virginia, he's young, he's raw, he's green, you're not going to do the things that you normally do. So, yes, you might see some similarities, but offensively, I see nothing there that scares me. Defensively, they can hang with you if you allow them to.
Well, that's the one area I'm looking at. For instance, I would love to see the run game get going. I wasn't overly concerned with the run game not getting going against Tampa Bay because Tampa Bay's defense has historically been pretty solid against the run. Vita Vea is having a career year, and also they were playing on ground where it was like, I don't know, what Ken Walker's slipping and falling. Like, what if people are just, you know what I mean? There were so many extra factors with that game that you were trying to add a lot of context and excuses. So when they went against the Raiders and you also saw the run game kind of struggle to get going, that concern did start to build. I would love to see Ken Walker in the run game and the offensive line get going against the Rams. Unfortunately, that right now is not just their only strength, but a really good one.
Yeah, that's the best thing they got going for them is defending the run. I mean, defensively, like I said, they're solid. 10 overall. Offensively is where they struggle. They're 31st overall. But this is a game. It's crazy that I'm thinking of this game as a get-right game against
the Los Angeles Rams,
right?
I know.
And how dare I say that because we know how things go with the
audacity.
Rams. But you have to look at the situation and say, chances are we should be able to run the football. Aaron Donald is out the game. Chances are you should be able to put up some points against this defense just because of the way your offense is playing, even though this defense is solid. Chances are... This defense should be able to apply some pressure to whoever they have at quarterback, whether that's Wolford or Perkins, just because of all the weapons they're missing. So I'm not taking them lightly. Definitely not.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at film, and there's nothing that jumps out and scares me right now.
What's it going to be like seeing Bobby again? What's it going to be like for you as someone who's covered the Seahawks, who's gotten to know Bobby well? I mean, what's it going to be like for you personally to see Bobby out there?
It's weird. I was watching film, and I'm like, man, my guy's rocking the 4-5. He's in a different blue. He got yellow on right now. It's different. But, you know, that's the business. Eventually, your best player is going to play for a different team or he's going to retire. I mean, Tom Brady left the Patriots after 20 years. So that's part of the business, man. But I'm not going to lie. It's going to be weirder when the Rams come to Seattle and Bobby plays.
I agree. I think that's when it's really going to happen. Also, because that's when I'll be seeing it in person. I'm not traveling, and a lot of folks here aren't traveling to see it. But obviously, it's going to be a focus of the broadcast. I mean, you have a Rams team that's pretty boring right now, except that one of the biggest stories is going to be a reunion with one Hall of Fame player in his former team. I feel like when Bobby comes to Seattle for that regular season finale against the Rams, that he will have a much warmer welcome than would Russell Wilson. And I don't think that's just because the Rams aren't the threat that everyone thought they would be. I think that there is genuinely a different relationship Bobby had with the team and a different, different circumstances surrounding his departure.
Yeah, Bobby left this situation. Now, it wasn't like a clean cut. Everything's good. It was business, but there were no birds being flipped. You know, there were no rumors being leaked to the media and a whole bunch of drama going on. It was like a tough business decision. So it's a bit different. And I expect when Bobby comes back, man, it's going to be all love. He's going to go over CP.
Yeah, highlight
guys,
video.
Hug them up. Like, and that's the way it should be, man, because Bobby is one of the greats, not only on the field, but off the field as well.
It is interesting, though, looking at the – both Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner went to teams where not only they, but everyone else thought they would be much better. Everyone thought the Denver Broncos with Russell Wilson would be better than they are. And if you were like, no, I saw this coming, you're lying, because they are historically bad. Likewise, everyone thought that the Rams would at least be good. The Rams and the 49ers were favored to win the division. Both teams really struggling. You kind of have like a similar path for both guys, and yet one story feels so much different than the other right now.
Yeah, because I think it comes down to just personalities and the position, to when a quarterback leaves, he has more responsibility. He gets more of the spotlight.
Yeah.
He's expected to uplift the team. Like, you don't see a middle linebacker move and say, that's the piece we're missing, we're going to the Super Bowl. It always starts with the quarterback spot.
Yeah.
So it's a bit different. And I don't think Russell is a cocky guy, but Bobby is a lot more humble in his approach than Russell has been with his.
Bobby is a lot less focused on the brand of Bobby,
exactly.
Which a lot of quarterbacks are focused on. A lot of players are focused on their brand. A lot of quarterbacks are focused on their brand. What Russell does isn't necessarily like different. It's just, I think that there is a likability factor that some people have, and sometimes it's intangible and it feels like, well, why don't people like me, but they like this person, right? Like, some things are just hard to explain. Mm-hmm. And I think that Seattle fans will have far more warm feelings watching Bobby. And especially when Bobby comes back here to Seattle, than they did with Russ. I would expect like a tribute video. I'm going to expect some cheers if Bobby makes a play.
You think a tribute video already? You think
No, not, when he comes here.
Yeah. Bobby.
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think so. I think Pete Carroll really, really cares for Bobby Wagner.
I think he does.
And I think Pete Carroll's, if Pete Carroll wants something, he'll get it.
All right, so there was
Pete
no,
Carroll's like, I want a tribute video.
So no tribute video for Russell, but a tribute video for Bobby.
Yeah. I don't, yeah.
And is it because of just the way that it ended? So if Russell would have left the same way Bobby would have left, then you think Russell gets a tribute video?
If the Seahawks would have released Russell Wilson. No, actually, okay. The circumstances of the trade, of it seeming to everyone like Russell Wilson doesn't like this team. Russell Wilson wants out. And people kind of feeling betrayed by that, right?
Right.
And him being a little less relatable and less likable than Bobby already in the years preceding that. I think that some people might think it's petty, but I do think there are warmer feelings for Bobby Wagner, and I would not be shocked if there was a tribute video for him and not for... I thought there was something for Wilson.
I'm going to say no video.
I thought there was something. Am I misremembering?
I don't think so.
Curtis, do you remember if there was like a tribute video for Russ?
There was not.
Oh, well...
Some pregame booze.
There may have been on social media after the trade, but not at the stadium, no.
I say no video for Bobby.
I say they do it.
Okay.
But it's going to be week 18, so.
I don't know. They didn't do a tribute video for, like, Earl. They didn't do a tribute video for Sherm. They didn't do a
tribute. Yeah, but the Rams don't pose a threat. The Rams are. No, but listen.
On
Monday Night Football, the first game of the season, you're going to come out. This team wanted nothing more than to win that game. End of the season, if you're looking at the playoffs and the Rams are coming here mathematically eliminated, you aren't giving up any pride or giving up any competitive edge by having a tribute video. Completely different circumstances.
Yeah, if I'm Bobby, I'm like, oh yeah, y'all give me this video because we're garbage right now. We're coming in week 18.
Get a video.
I want this video. I don't know. I think it's too soon. I think you got to wait.
Should we make it a donut bet?
Let's make it a donut
okay.
bet.
Okay.
All right.
It unfortunately won't be until like January 9th, the Monday after. But I say tribute video. You say no tribute video. All right. Let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
We must make headlines.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Bump and Stacy.
Headline number one, it's official. The college football playoff will expand to 12 teams beginning in the 2024 season. What's the real headline?
Congrats to the SEC on this incredible development.
They did it.
You guys did it. You did it. It's happening.
They're going to get teams like Vanderbilt in.
Everybody gets to
play. No, I'm actually excited for this. I think the college football playoff, first of all, I think the college football playoff committee is incredibly biased in their rankings of things. You had it when you sounded off yesterday on not only the placement of Utah, but on several other universities that you felt like Washington should have been above.
Right.
And even Utah, frankly, might have been above. So we know that they are biased. So the idea of expanding the field leaves less room for you to just be like, every decision matters a lot because there are only four teams. And I want nothing but the health of the Pac-12. I hope that Washington continues to advance. I hate saying this, but like, I do hope that Oregon continues to advance, and I hope we continue to see good, promising things from Washington State and Oregon State. You know, Stanford's out there studying and stuff. You know what I mean? We're going to let them, like, find cures for diseases. They're doing their thing. It's okay. We'll leave it up here for handling football.
Oh, man. Yeah, but this is good for football because, I mean, we're lucky enough to we're at that age where we remember the BCS, right? Computers are calculating who's going to do what. Sometimes things didn't seem fair. And now we've had the college football playoff for a while. Four teams isn't enough. So the expansion, it just makes you more secure in what's going on. Like, okay, the best teams are really going to be in this game.
Yeah.
You got to earn it. You're not going to sit down and wait for somebody to grant your wish and say, all right, you're into the semifinals. Like, you really have to earn it. And I love it.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, we get a halfway decent Thursday night football game tonight between the Bills and Patriots. What's the real headline?
Let's be real. You sickos are watching no matter who's playing.
You already know.
No matter who's playing. They could have been it's the Broncos and a local high school facing off, and you guys would be watching that game. You'd be tweeting about how bad it is. You'd be like, oh, God, this game's horrible. Who's watching this while you're, like, glued to your TV? All of you are addicted. You have a problem, and you're all sick in the head.
My name is Michael, and I have a problem. I'm addicted to football. I don't care who's playing, what day it is, what time it is. I'm watching it. And it's nice to finally get a Thursday night game that, you know, has some, I guess, A-team who's
panache.
Doing some things.
Yeah.
You know, the Patriots are decent. You got Mac Jones. Where are they? They're 7-4, right? Patriots are
What the Patriots have, the Patriots are okay. They have some really good defensive players. What they really have a chance to do is make the AFC East really chaotic. Because if they upset the Bills, Bills fans are already upset that they're looking at a wild card spot for a team they thought would be a Super Bowl team.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Miami Dolphins came in and surprised people hanging on to that. The Jets are still in there. That's a really competitive division.
So it's out of that division and the AFC West and the NFC East. No.
NFC.
So who are the two best divisions?
NFC
East.
In the AFC, right now it is the AFC East, I think.
So it's the both East.
Yeah.
East side, right of this.
Yep. Yeah.
Gross.
I know. I hate it. Curtis is just
the
livid right now.
AFC East currently would have three teams in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Jets, Bills, Dolphins, with the Patriots being the eighth seed. And then the NFC East has all four teams in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Gross.
And we thought it would be the AFC West.
Yeah.
I don't think
that did not,
it would be the NFC.
That did not happen.
No. Remember, people were talking about the AFC West would be cannibalizing itself, and they were like, think of all the talent that's gone there. Because it wasn't just Russell Wilson going to Denver. It was the Chargers getting J.C. Jackson, Khalil Mack, and obviously they had Justin Herbert, and they were getting healthier with James. And then it was the Raiders bringing in Chandler Jones. They traded for Davante Adams. I mean, the entire... And then, of course, Kansas City is Kansas City. And people were like, oh, my God. Like, this division is going to be must-see TV. Kansas City remains a fantastic offense and a fantastic team. Everyone else kind of disappointing.
Yeah, FC West looks... The Chiefs run that. There's so many names and so much talent in that division.
I know.
It makes no sense what's going
None.
On. But then you look at the East, man. The Bills have been steady. Dolphins doing their thing. Patriots consistent. Jets came out of nowhere.
If the Jets had a quarterback.
Jets, I don't know. They got to prove some stuff. Jets might be some pretenders here.
No, you think? I think that defense is so good.
I got Minnesota, Buffalo coming up next. So we'll see what they're made of.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, the Kraken go for win number 7 in a row tonight. Tall task, though, against Alex Ovechkin and the Washington Capitals. What's the real headline?
Given the season Ovechkin's having, let's hope the Kraken can also muster 7 goals in a row tonight. They're going to need it.
Don't get them. I need some shinny golf. I mean, shinny hockey. Why do I want to say
golf?
Why do I want to say golf?
Because you're obsessed with golf, bro.
I am obsessed with golf. Shinny hockey is what I need.
A shinny shutty. Oh, a shinny shutty?
Shinny shutty.
I don't see them shutting out Washington.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I don't. If there is a shutty, I don't like what the probable outcome is for that shutty. Curtis, do you have stats up in front of you for Ovechkin? This is going to be a tall, tall task for the Kraken. I know that he's leading in several categories. You were looking it up earlier, and I dropped the ball because I forgot.
He's got 13 goals this season already, 23 points in 24 games, 793 career goals, second all-time behind Wayne Gretzky, which, I mean, he could probably pass Gretzky within the next, like, year or two.
God.
I think he's about 100 away from Gretzky. God, that's unreal. One thing about the NHL being in town now is that it's really cool that these like all-time great athletes get a show up in Seattle. Crosby, also with the Penguins. You get Alex Ovechkin here once a year.
Yep.
Didn't get that opportunity just a couple seasons ago, so
but
pay respects to the greats.
That's why I also like, I can't wait for the NBA to be here, because it's like, you could hypothetically have a horrible team. You still want to go see, like, oh, Giannis is in town.
Yeah.
Or, like, Morant's in town. Or, you know, whatever team that you happen to really like. Maybe a former player in college that you followed. You know what I mean? Like, it's very, very cool. Definitely check out that game. If you weren't planning on watching it and you're looking for something because you can't stand Thursday night football, watching Ovechkin, you know, it was pretty solid compensation there.
You can't stand Thursday night football. Are you American?
I don't know.
This
some
is
people
football.
Some people don't. They watch it and they complain about it the whole time. It's Bump and Stacey on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app. Don't forget tonight you can join host Michael Bumpus and Paul Moyer at 7 p.m. at Bellevue Square Center Court for a live broadcast and preview of this Sunday Seahawks game. It is Hawks Live tonight at 7 p.m. Bellevue Square Center Court. And this week at Hawks Live, we're giving you a chance to win tickets to see the Seahawks host the Panthers, which is the next game. Learn more at seattlesports.com. Again, that is tonight, 7 p.m. All right, coming up next, Pete Carroll and Clint Hurt talk about what it takes to fix this defense.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
All right, Pete Carroll and Clint Hurt know they got to fix this defense. Gave up over 300 yards from scrimmage to Josh Jacobs, over 220 on the ground from him alone. And this is not the first time. In fact, it's the third time they've given up more than 200 yards on the ground. This run defense is in trouble. So let's figure out what reporters asked Pete and defensive coordinator Clint Hurt this week. Bump, after these cuts, I'm going to ask you what you think they're saying here, because obviously they got to remain a little bit vague, but we're going to try to figure out what kind of solutions they're looking for. So let's start with Pete. This one it's been covered a bit in terms of what they want to do to involve DBs, but we'll play it with cut number 11. Pete talking about maybe using guys from the secondary to slow things down.
Historically, that's one of the ways, you know, that you adjust the ratio in the run game, you know, how you fit your safeties in. We've been doing that for years, you know, and we do it now. We just may have to do a little bit more of it to slow things down.
All right, I'm going to jump to cut 12 really quickly here. Pete then asked, well, what's the risk if you add DBs to the box?
The downside is you expose your corners more. Basically, what that is generally what everybody knows. You know, when you do that, then your corners, you know, are more in one-on-one, more one-on-one situations.
All right, Bump, who may be added to the box to help out? And this is the risk worth the reward.
You're just talking about the safeties, you know what I mean? And in situations like this is where you miss Jamal Adams, because this is where he shines. When you're trying to stop the run, you need a body in the box. Ryan Neal's done a great job when he's in there, but Jamal Adams, just his body type is built for a more physical type of game. So you got to walk a safety down in there. And maybe you switch it up and throw Quandre in there as well, but it's all about getting bodies in there. You want the offensive lineman to have to account for certain guys, right? You got to make them communicate and send more than they can handle. That is the key. So, yeah, you just got to get bodies in a box, cause more chaos. But what does that do? It opens up lanes in the pass game.
All right. I thought some of what Clint Hurd had to say was interesting, though. He was also kind of vague in his response. Now, he's not going to be very specific. No head coach or coordinator is. But I do think that he's saying a lot without trying to here. So let's go over some of these cuts. First, we'll start with defensive coordinator Clint Hurt and cut number 13, saying, yes, we know we've seen these issues crop up earlier.
Just obviously still some of the ugly things that got us in trouble in the early part of the year showed back up again, obviously, when it comes to run fit issues we talk about, and obviously the tackling woes. That's the part that's the most frustrating, obviously. You know, a lot of it is just started the game out the first quarter of the game, we played outstanding football. You know, run game, the run fits were great. Obviously, in the pass game, Diggy with the two big picks. And it's being able to weather the storm when things, you do have a bad player, you have a bad drive, to put that behind you to move on to the next one. And just having the consistency in the play.
Now, that's interesting to me because I thought part of the issue was maybe sometimes they don't have, you know, the right guys out there. Maybe sometimes they're, you know, just missing tackling. And missing tackling to me is just pure execution. Like, you know, sometimes it's mental, but either way, you didn't execute. Saying, you know, hey, sometimes it's about bouncing back from a bad play is interesting because I don't think I've heard that explanation when it comes to struggles against the run.
Yeah, he's tapping into the mental of a football player and saying, all right, being able to, okay, not make a play and then just wash it and get ready for this next one. Because that's what athletes have to do. No one's ever, I've said it 1,000 times, no one's ever played a perfect game, right? You got some of the best football players in the world have negatives during a game or have minuses when they watch the film. So that's just a mentality thing. And I think if they're able to do that and execute, now you can't just wash it and then do the same thing the next play. And
yeah.
Like, it's okay, I'll get the next play, right? You have to own it, you have to feel it, but you have to take the coaching and then apply it. So he is trying to get these guys to, it sounds like, realize that plays will be made. And if he is having to address being able just to bounce back, then obviously he thinks that that's an issue with this defense or maybe certain guys on this defense.
Well, cut number 14, he talks about youth on this defense and how that sometimes is an obstacle.
No, I mean, everything that we worked on in practice, we got in that game, you know. So there was no surprises when it came down to that. Like I said, it's just the consistency of doing things the right way, you know. A lot of times, especially when you deal with youthfulness in football, it's like with your kids. You know, I tell my son and my daughter the things that you shouldn't do, but it's like they need to screw it up first in order to be like, oh, that's why you said that. You know, so it is some growing pains along the way, so you just keep on pushing.
Now, that's the difference between this game and Tampa Bay. With Tampa Bay, it was, oh, whoa, they're going to run the ball? Mm-hmm. We were expecting them to, you know, throw it all over the field because they can't run for a darn. In this one, you were like, all right, look, we want to make sure we stop Adams. Adams, heading into this game, had over 100 yards in 3 consecutive games. We know that they are targeting him a ton. We know Josh Jacobs can be deadly, but we got to take out Adams. For the most part, they did. I assumed like that maybe they were surprised by how often they ran it, but Clint Hurt saying, no, once again, sometimes it's just guys messing up because they're young and they've got to figure it out.
Yeah, growing pains, that's real. Imagine all the mistakes we made in college, right?
I didn't make any mistakes
I'm talking
college.
About us regular people,
okay.
Not someone as prestigious as yourself.
Yeah. I just did lots of studying.
Yeah, that's all you did. But like you make mistakes and you learn from them, and sometimes you got to make the mistake 2 or 3 times and then you're like, dang it, all right, this ain't gonna work, maybe I should switch it up a little bit. And especially with youth, right, especially when you have a new defense, a new defensive coordinator might be speaking a new language, your responsibilities are different. But at this point of the season, week 12-13, you need to see those mistakes start becoming less frequent. And it's kind of discouraging to see that, okay, they're having trouble against the run again. But I think in Tampa or against Tampa, they just weren't ready for it. I think last week, the Las Vegas Raiders just had a plan and were efficient and executed it better than them. So this is the week. I always look at it like in 3-game stretches. It's like, okay, they hit you with something. Someone else does the same to you. Now you have 2 weeks to kind of fix that thing. So I think this week is going to be the week. You got Cam Akers back there, then the kid from Notre Dame. The run game is not explosive with this offense right now.
Yep.
So if there's any game, get your mojo back, get your fits right, make the tackles. This is the game.
I saw it as like in Tampa, against Tampa Bay in Germany, they got kind of out-schemed and outsmarted. Against the Raiders, they just got outplayed.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Like, they did.
They just...
Simple concepts. Zone lead. won the game for them. There's nothing special about that. Yeah. They just big boy.
All right, let's talk about the pass rush, too, which has been a problem. And it sure would be great if they were getting a ton of sacks and just couldn't stop runners. At least you'd have one thing figured out. But they are still struggling to get the pass rush going. For a while, it was. Uchenna Nwosu has 7 sacks on the season. He's your team leader. For a while, you were really getting to the quarterback. Once you started playing Tampa Bay, you struggled with that. Over the last 2 games, you only have a handful. You had 1 quarterback hit, no sacks against Tampa Bay, and you only have 1 sack combined in the last 2 games. So Clint Hurt, in cut number 15, is talking about why he's seeing a lack of a pass rush.
Like what we got in the last few weeks with the Raiders and with Tampa Bay is you got a lot of play actions, obviously. So the Max Pros continue to find ways to get those guys free in that schematically and just keep working on edges and use your tips and tendencies and things of that nature. Third down, we just got to get better. We've been off, you know, it's rushing together as a unit and guys winning one-on-ones. We got to do that as coaches to help those guys out.
All right, he's kind of talking about a couple different issues there, but what's he saying?
He says Max Pro. So what that means is, right, they keep the running back in to help protect. So instead of having 5 guys, 5 offensive linemen protecting, now you got 6. So when you send that extra guy, that running back's going to pick him up. They have to get better at attacking that. Then he says it comes down to just winning your one-on-one battles. That comes down to leverage, hands, feet, the motor, getting after it. And if everyone's winning their one-on-one battles, all right, then that pocket starts to collapse. Or you got one guy or 2 guys who win their one-on-one battles, and it forces the QB to step up or get outside and forces them into a hit or into a sack. So it's all about this. Everyone doing their job pretty much is what it comes down to. And when they are max protection, protected is being relentless and not stopping and making quarterbacks uncomfortable. You're going to see 1 of 2 young quarterbacks. You got Perkins and you got Wolfer here. If we can't make them uncomfortable, the rest of the season is going to be tougher than I expected.
Yes. Okay. There were a ton of press conferences and interviews over the last 24 hours. So that was head coach Pete Carroll and defensive coordinator Clint Hurt that you just heard. Coming up next, we also heard from Mariners president of baseball ops, Jerry DePoto, from the Jerry DePoto Show this morning. This is exclusive audio on with Brock and Salk, and it's coming your way next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Bump and Stacy,
powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
I feel like we're like the Cliff Notes version in our first hour of everything you need to know. Everything you need to know ahead of the Seahawks-Rams. Everything you need to know from the press conferences out of Seahawks headquarters yesterday. And now everything you need to know from the Jerry DePoto show that was on this morning. We're talking Mariners hot stove. So here we go. This was Jerry DePoto on with Brock and Salk. I know that a lot of you are wondering, like, when are they going to start to make moves? Starting with cut number 7, Jerry DePoto saying they at least have a better idea of who's been knocked off the list.
We tend to spread wider nets. We contact the free agents, various teams about trade targets, you know, and then we just constantly negotiate and move down the road until the deal appears. You know, what that deal looks like could still be a free agent. It could still be a trade. But, you know, as we go, we effectively are knocking players off the list. And we have a better idea of who's not on our list at this point than who will actually join the group. But we do still intend to add a player at second base, you know, and we are confident that we'll ultimately get to that point. You know, who that player is at this point still has to appear. And my guess is somewhere between now and the winter meetings, it's going to become more vivid.
How do you feel hearing that?
I don't feel good.
Why don't you feel good?
I feel like he's saying, hey, let's see who everyone else gets first, and then we'll have a better idea of who we can actually
get. Oh, that's interesting. I guess I was hearing, like, we know already who we don't want based on whatever analytics or team culture things we have. Then we know who we don't want based on conversations we're having with agents that we feel like is too rich for our blood. Yeah. Now let's see who's left. Like, who would be a fit for the team that isn't too rich for our blood, or who would want to come here?
I hear process of elimination going on right now. I'm looking at a test on a question on the test and saying, well, it ain't A and C.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, what is it, though? What is it? All right, cut number 8. This is DePoto talking about what he's learned from the trade market so far.
So I guess I'm not learning anything that I didn't anticipate, you know, learning along the way. There are a ton of awesome players available at the top of this free agent market. That tends to garner a lot of the attention. You know, and meanwhile, if you are, you know, like with the Trevor Gotts of the world, if you are aware of internal needs and connect with the right players on the right deals early, These are moves, the subtle little moves that happen in November and early December that really shape the function of a 26-man roster. And then what happens at the winter meetings is oftentimes the more glamorous move. But this is the time for, building the engine. And
here's what I hear.
Okay.
What I hear is we're not making any of those big splashy moves right now. What I don't necessarily hear is whether they will make them during the winter meetings, only that right now the moves that you see from a lot of teams are things that address, hey, we know we need a bullpen arm.
Yeah.
And we already had our eyes on this guy. And this guy knows he's only going to get a couple offers in free agency. So we got this thing knocked out of the park early. I don't hear, though, a team they wouldn't come out and say, we're going after these guys, per se. Although, Curtis, you pointed out yesterday, the Braves GM came out and was like, no, we want to spend a lot of money.
Right.
Yeah, we want to be top five in payroll. That's
we want to be top five in payroll.
Not a bad goal to have.
Yeah, it's not a bad goal to have at all. I don't know, Bump, what do you hear?
I hear that they haven't made any upgrades to the engine yet, but they took that thing to Jiffy Lube, got the fluids in,
getting
what I'm
a check.
Got it.
That's what
tuna.
They did. Look, we didn't add a stereo system. We did change the coolant.
Yeah.
Good, yeah. That's what I'm hearing right now.
Hey, we filled the air on your tires. You're good to go.
Little
there.
Things like that.
They did the little things to maintain and kind of help the vehicle keep moving efficiently.
And those things are important. My change oil light's been on for a while now.
That check engine light is just looking at you. Do you just put a picture over it and cover it up? Like, it's not there.
No, I just keep checking the percentage and I'm like, nah. I mean, yeah, it's single digits, but it's not one. Curtis, you look stressed.
God.
You look stressed.
The dad in me is just...
The entirety of this station just becomes dad. We're like constantly... I told you guys yesterday, Kyle Brown, who's our program director. Kyle Brown, who's our program director, one time was like, yeah, I saw liquid leaking out of your car, so I was kind of looking at it. And then when I went across to Ellensburg, you guys were like, you need to share your location. We're a little concerned about your
worried.
Car.
Yeah.
All right. I know a lot of you guys are wondering, well, what about budget, right? That's what everyone's really wondering. Are you going to spend or are you not? So let's get to cut number 9. This isn't Jerry DePoto saying, hey, we're going to spend, but it's him talking about what they're being mindful of when it comes to budget.
One of the things that really gets lost in the wash right now with some of what we've done with extensions for guys like J.P. Crawford and Julio Rodriguez and Luis Castillo, with some of the escalating player costs that we anticipate with the coming arbitration of guys like Logan Gilbert and George Kirby and Cal Raleigh, we are very aware of what our future payrolls look like, because the decisions you make today, and this is more difficult for someone who's not looking more broadly. Now, the decisions you make today don't just affect your 2023 payroll, and you're not going to go from $115 million to $215 in a year. Because what winds up happening is 2 years from that point, you're at 315 because the escalating costs.
So I understand the logic there, Bump, of being like, hey, we know we want to pay George Kirby. We know we want to pay Cal Raleigh. We know we want to pay Logan Gilbert. I mean, this is basic stuff. If you think of, you could think of it with teams that do have more strict salary caps in the NFL, for instance. The Seahawks, if they want to pay DK, you recognize that by paying DK, you may not be giving another extension to Tyler Lockett down the road. You may have to choose between Jordan Brooks and Daryl Taylor, right? So that's kind of what Jerry's hinting at here. Like, we don't want to double our payroll knowing that, if we add two free agent contracts that extend through 2026, well, in 2025, we got a couple guys we got to pay.
Yeah, he's looking towards the future. He's not just living in this moment, even though this moment is huge, right? You need to add some pieces. You need to make guys feel secure, but you also have to realize that in 2-3 years, you're going to be dealing with the decisions that you're making right now. So that's what he's saying, is like, look, we realize we got to get things done, but we also realize that what we do right now affects moves 2-3 years from now.
Yep. Curtis, when would they have to pay Kirby, Cal, and Logan?
So Cal and Logan are not arbitration eligible until 2025.
Okay.
And then I'm guessing Kirby is going to be 2026 since he debuted this last season. So it's still a ways away before those guys are going to be making more than what they're making now. So you feel like you look at what the Astros gave Jose Abreu, a 3-year contract. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't see why you can't go out and give a similar deal to another player like that. I mean, we're still 3 years away from 2025.
I mean, I think the Mariners would be comfortable with three-year deals, right? He says, we don't want to go beyond 2026. I think they'd give out some three-year deals. A guy like Carlos Correa is going to be looking for more than that, presumably. I know he just took a very short-term deal, but if you look at those top-of-the-line free agents, like Aaron Judge isn't going to come out looking for 3 years.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
But so, like, when you say, when we all say raise payroll, it doesn't mean just, you know, go out and throw a 9-year contract to somebody. Yes. Let's go out and get somebody on a 1-year deal. Go out and get somebody on a 2-year deal, 3-year deal. Like, it doesn't have to be a 10-year deal.
Right.
We're just saying go out and spend.
Yeah. Well, when are those winter meetings, by the way? Do you know offhand?
They start on Sunday.
Okay. So next week, we're all going to be watching this very closely. Jerry Dipoto saying that those talks heat up during and after the winter meeting. So keep your eye on the hot stove. Right now, it's cool, but it's warming up. You can listen to us anytime and check back on the rest of the show if you miss any of it by subscribing to the Bump and Stacey podcast. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Spotify. I saw a couple people mentioning us in their Spotify wrap-up, which was awesome. Google Play, Apple Podcasts, especially if you use Apple Podcasts, please rate and review. We would really, really appreciate it. All right, we got Larry Stone joining us next. We're going to have a mix of Mariners and Seahawks here. Then we got some good questions in four down territory about what to expect from Jalen Ramsey, a name we haven't mentioned at all. All of it's coming your way next. Also, a little bit of a scandal brewing between Patrick Peterson and Kyler Murray coming up in the timeline. Don't go anywhere.